Good morning, everybody. This is Richard Sachs, your host on Lost Arts Radio, and this is the informal type Saturday Q&A show for September 3rd, 2016. The year's about three quarters over almost, and it's going really fast. I'm really happy to be here with you. It's kind of an abbreviated show today. I have a special meeting I had to go to, or be meeting with Dr. Cousins, who's coming on tomorrow night on the Sunday evening show, which is 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, every Sunday. And Dr. Cousins, of course, has been doing a once a month lesson with us that's lasting a year. So the last one is in November, and this is the September one tomorrow night. So that should be really interesting. I hope you can make it. But even though I have this meeting today, I wanted to at least show up for a little bit of time. We've got a maximum of a little bit over an hour. So just in case there was anything interesting on your mind, and then I'll share a couple of things with you that were going through my thoughts in the last few days. As we see things definitely get more intense and heating up in the world, it becomes more important to work inside yourself, because that's really our only point of security and stability and insight. And when I thought of the idea of insight, for some reason my mind, maybe because I was going to be meeting with Dr. Cousins and he's got this beautiful retreat in Arizona, and it reminded me of the first time in this particular lifetime when I really had these two kinds of learning starkly contrasted against each other. And that was a long time ago. How long ago? Boy, it's like, about 50 years ago now. I was a university student in California, and I went there thinking that I was going to study sciences. And, my dad was a medical researcher, which is where I got my first exposure to health research, actually, was working in his lab. He worked on blood flow and things like that. So I was a university student to study sciences and math and physics and different things like that. And I just happened, by no coincidence at all, because there aren't any coincidences from what I can tell, that I met an incredible being named Alan Chadwick. And he was in his late 50s at the time. It's kind of funny to think that I'm a lot older now than when I met him as a student. But that's how it goes. Time goes really fast. It changes things on a physical level, but not in who we really are. So I ran into Alan Chadwick at that time, and when I did, he had just recently showed up at the university in Santa Cruz. And the reason that he showed up there was because he had been a Shakespearean actor in England, studied with Rudolf Steiner, and had been a commander on a battleship in World War II. And he was an amazing figure. It was like, watching him was like watching a Shakespearean play all the time. That was kind of how he talked as well. But when he realized what he had been part of, from this, big aristocratic family and taking a major role in the war activities, at that time, I was really unaware of things happening on a political level. And I mean, I was somewhat aware that I didn't want to go murder people in Vietnamese villages for the oil companies, but that was about as far as I had realized it at that point. So he might have gotten up to where he learned that it was the Western powers that funded and made it possible to arm the Nazis and really started the war, and it was the American and UK and general Western influence in eugenics that Hitler really admired. And I know there's people around, some of whom are friends of mine, saying that Hitler was really a great guy, and he was a war hero earlier, before World War II. But they're saying he was a great guy. It's all made up, you know. None of the German atrocities happened. It was only the Russian and American people that were bad. And I don't buy any of that at all. I think they're all crazy. But it was definitely true that New World Order forces were making it all possible to have as big of a war as they could manage at the time, you know, to move things forward in the chessboard that they had set up. So Alan might have found out some of that kind of stuff, but in any case, he left it in disgust, not only the military part, but his aristocratic family and all the wealth, which was a lot, and came to America. I think Lady Balfour was the one that brought him, but some friends of his from over there. And he was looking for a place to do a garden. Because remember, he was a student of Rudolf Steiner in Austria, but I'm not positive about that. And he was on a whole different level. I mean, when I met him, he'd come to the university and they said, well, this guy doesn't have any PhDs or doesn't even have any Nobel Prizes or anything, so he's obviously not the kind of expert that we want on our staff. But he does seem to know about gardening, and we've got some areas which need to be cleared. We have one rocky hillside in particular that was a few acres covered with poison oak, which is one of the big plants in lower elevations in California where they have enough water for it to grow. And most people get a really bad allergic reaction to it, so they wanted that cleared out. So they were actually willing, from what I learned at the time, to give him a shovel and say, okay, you can go work on this hillside, and you can even have this little, there was kind of a cabin that we called the chalet there. And so he just started, well, he probably started with visualizing what he wanted to create there, not the kind of visualization that people usually think, where you just tell yourself something over and over again until it hopefully comes true. It's the other kind where you tune into what's already there on an energetic potential level, and you allow that energy to come through you so that the thing that's on the energy level shows up on the physical level. And so he went there and did that and started working. And gradually the students that were at the university realized that there was a totally different kind of teacher on the premises, not the kind that is like the seventh generation of memorizing things to tell the students and they repeat them as if they know them. He wasn't that kind of a teacher. I mean, he had been through extensive classical education, much more than is given now in Western countries, but he knew all about not only Shakespeare, but Chaucer and Cicero and Thoreau and all of these classical amazing individuals that he had read extensively and could quote with no effort. But he was blending that with his inner vision and what he saw in nature and the living nature beings that Rudolf Steiner talked a lot about, and were the subject of the garden at Findhorn, if you're aware of that. That's a really interesting one to read about or visit. I don't know if it's still there, actually. But this was what Alan was putting together. And so when I encountered him at the garden site that was just then first being developed, so it wasn't a program or anything, it was just a guy in his late 50s with a bunch of students who would gather every day in the morning in this chalet, which had no power, just kind of a cast iron wood fireplace in the center of one side. And he would start by giving a talk, which was exactly like having a front row seat at the highest quality Shakespearean play that you could go to. It was totally amazing. And he talked about these old Roman and Greek and other teachers as if they were right there and their voice was coming through. It was an incredible experience, and it affected my life really deeply. I didn't have the understanding to know why and how at the time, but I could definitely feel it. Now, just for a little bit of context, I had had completely clear vision myself up to when I was about 2, and I remembered what I had planned to do and accomplish in this lifetime. And then I got diverted about that age, 2, 2.5, into fear, of which there are a myriad of different variations that you can get involved in. And lost track. I mean, I knew by the time I was 4 that I wanted to know what was behind all this play that was going on the physical level of existence, which was kind of unusual at the age of 4. I was really focused on that, but I had lost touch with what I remembered earlier. So I felt like an exile until for the next, 30 years. And I was doing the health research starting in 65 and consciousness research. I went to India multiple times studying with different spiritual teachers and masters and trying to put all this together and figure out what was going on here. Doing a lot of intense meditation since about 1970. And so when I encountered Alan in the mid-60s, it really had a deep, shocking effect on me. And I realized the energy that I felt in the garden was a deeper level of understanding and insight than what was being taught by these highly credentialed teachers in the official classrooms. And that made me really step back inside myself and think about what it was I was doing there. So I kept doing the conventional level of studying, and I did that. I mean, I'm still doing it now, actually. Not because I'm really curious about what new insight they're teaching in science now, because I really went beyond that by 1970 or so. But the recognizable credential I thought I could use as much of as possible if I ever came out of being invisible and started teaching or, talking to people on a larger scale. And at that point, I certainly never intended to be any presence on the radio or anything like it. And personality-wise, I don't have an interest in it. I like seclusion and privacy and peace and harmony and things like that, and just exploring further and further. But a couple of years ago, that became obvious that stage was over. I mean, well, it wasn't going to be the only thing anymore. So wherever this is going or not going, I guess I'm going to find out. Alan Chadwick was the early exposure after having forgotten what I was doing here in the 60s. And then I continued that. And later on, much later, a lot later, probably 35 years later, I spent about 20 years including a study of the economic and political power structure that is running America and most of the world right now, the top positions of which governments and their corporate partners are almost all filled by extremely malevolent individuals. And that's where most of these so-called issues like the chemtrails and the geoengineering and the biotech and GMO stuff and the toxic agriculture in general, chemical fertilizers, which is what led to it, and nuclear power and war and all this stuff is really coming from and being encouraged by the same cartel of rulers at that level. Even though the issues are complex and interconnected and, have multiple levels to understand, and there's almost unlimited complications there, it's pretty simple where they're coming from. At the top levels, the point is complete destruction. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's what it looks like to me. I don't see any other feasible explanation for what's going on at all. And at the top levels, they intend to destroy humanity and the entire biosphere. Simple as that. And they don't want to do it quickly. They want to do it gradually, in a ritualistic manner. And it's not that they couldn't do it now. They have the technology, probably 50 years at least beyond what we know about. And they could delete this planet right now if they chose to do that at the top levels. But they don't choose to. They want to do it slowly, and it's in keeping with their interest in torturing a victim before they kill them and taking energy from the suffering of the victim, which they do on an individual level all over the world in ceremonies and things that are going on. I mean, it's so weird. Normal people would never even be able to that this stuff's going on. But that's what they're doing on a global scale to the whole world, to the biosphere, gradually making each species go extinct, gradually weakening the human race down to the point where it can disappear, but on the way become completely twisted and sick, which it's well on the way to doing now, as you may have noticed if you've opened your eyes on any particular day in the recent past. That's what's happening all around us. And it makes it simple to understand what's going on, so it's not confusing to you. Because it really is not that hard to understand. It's just our normalcy bias, which is a psychological term, that we really don't like to see things that are shockingly out of what's normal. And the mind makes excuses why they aren't real, so that you can go back to thinking everything's normal or normal enough to keep going indefinitely without radical, you know, problems. So that's what's unfolding around us. And at the same time, consciousness of the general public, at least parts of them, is rising. So you're in the middle of this incredible epic drama, both in the audience and on the stage. And you're the main character. And I know that sounds impossible, that everybody could be the main character, but a lot of deeper truths on the intellectual level are paradoxical, and they're still true. So in math and physics, if A cannot be true at the same time as B, then you know for a fact that either A or B is not true, or both. But in reality, it doesn't tell you anything. It's just part of the holographic projection of consciousness. So in the reality, as it exists, A might be mutually exclusive with B, meaning they can't both exist, but they exist anyway, both of them. And your intellectual mind can spend as much time trying to figure that out as it wants to. And it's not going to get the answer, except the answer that it's beyond the intellectual mind, but it's not beyond direct perception and the understanding that comes from it. So just because something is not rational doesn't mean that it's not true. Sorry if that sounds insane, but I've seen that to be the case. So what we saw with Alan Chadwick standing in the garden, and, you know, we, as students in our teens, we would go out there and want to know what to do. And it would be the sun would just be coming up, and it was incredibly beautiful. And Alan wouldn't go to his papers and try to you know, coordinate everything and figure out, well, if this guy does this, this girl over here can do this. And no, he would stand in one part of the garden motionless with his eyes closed for maybe 5 minutes or maybe more, which is a long time when you're not moving. And then when he opened his eyes, he'd know that in detail everything that every one of us had to do. And he'd also know the changes that that would produce in the garden and what part that would be of the ultimate scene that we were all part of creating. And we were still like Pugsley, I think his name was Pugsley, said it in the Addams Family Values movie when I used to watch movies a long time ago. He said, no, I'm still on fractions. I mean, we were still on fractions. We didn't have the slightest idea what Alan Chadwick was doing. Just that he was this crazy guy that would tell us things to do and they'd turn out like beautiful works of art, even though we had no idea how they were going to fit together. And he would go around during the day like this eccentric taskmaster, and he'd pick up these little pebbles when he was on the other side of the garden and somebody's mind was wandering, and he'd throw the pebble in this trajectory upward, and it would come down exactly on the back of the person who was not paying attention to what they were doing, and look at you like he was two inches away, even though he was, you know, a couple hundred yards away. It was a surreal experience, and most of us, speaking for myself anyway, had no clue what was actually going on. We just knew that we liked being there, and we really wanted to get out of the conventional classes as fast as we could, and we're watching the clock and taking notes and memorizing what they wanted us to memorize and running back to the garden. So you have to use your fluency in the conventional sciences or conventional skills or just conventional communication as a tool, because you want to do some good here. And it's not because of a belief system. It's that if you start becoming aware directly, not because of a book you read in class, but because you start being less asleep and you start being aware of what's going on around you, the normal response is that you want to help. And the reason for that is not to rack up merit points. It's because that other person who's suffering is you. And it's not a philosophy. It's true. So because of where we all came from, we have this deep interconnection that has nothing to do with words. And you can try and explain it according to what belief system you like, but it's way beyond words. It's what you call reality. And because we have that connection, the normal desire is for other people to have the best experience they can possibly have. And you don't have to worry about whether that comes back to you, because it always does. And maybe the visible part of the reaction will take time. Some of them take decades or longer, lifetimes. But there's another part of that reaction from what you do that is instantaneous, faster than the speed of light. Because you can wish well to living beings that are on the other side of the galaxy, and there are living beings on the other side of every galaxy, not only galaxies, but dimensions where they don't even have galaxies. And they're far away, and it takes light a very long time to get there, if it's even a dimension where physical light exists. But your intent reaches them at the same time as you have it. That's not just faster. It's not thousands of times faster like the physicists are talking about with the Birkeland currents. It's instant. So it's beyond the concept of speed. And it brings up the fact, if you look at it enough, that distance and time are part of the projected hologram that each one of us is sending out, and which becomes our experiential reality. And the reason that you're the star performer and the main player in this play is that what you see around you, you sent out. And that's true of every single living being everywhere. But that does two things. It makes you responsible personally for everything in your world, not punishment-wise, because justice is a low level of human concept. It has nothing to do with the higher reality at all. But it makes you responsible in a way that gives you power. And it gives you the power of a fairy tale king or queen, or more, actually much more, much more. Because those kings and queens got disobeyed all the time. Whereas if you get in touch with the power that you have, disobedience is not a factor. Because you can change the foundation of energies. And things will change even in the past. Because remember, time is part of the projected hologram. So what is it that makes the past unchangeable? Just a belief system that holds it together, that's all. So if you get in touch with that level of who you are, why you're the main player, and it's not an ego thing, okay? It doesn't mean your personality is better than somebody else's. I mean, I know the mind would love to jump on that, but forget it. That's not the case. They're the main character too. But it's just that from your perspective, the fact that you are means that if you get into that center inside yourself consciously, wide awake, completely relaxed, and experientially, not as a thought, you gradually get more and more ability to change things. And the place that you can get in to do that cannot be accessed if you have any kind of negative intent for anybody anywhere. It's like a fail-safe mechanism. So there's no danger that nasty people in the power structure will ever get there before they drop everything they're doing, and not just their actions, but their intentions. And they have that right to drop those things and change themselves whenever they get ready to do that. And that's where some of our strongest allies are hiding, is in the nastiest people in the power structure. Because underneath that role they're playing, that costume that they utterly identify with and think is them, underneath that is the same level of being as we are. And if we're not given the grace to experience what we're experiencing as who we are, and we were looking through their eyes with their background and their programming, we would be them. And I'm not asking you to agree with anything I'm saying. At this point, you know, I didn't want to do this. I have to tell you what is the best I can see to tell you. Not from some system of logic or philosophy or religion or belief or anything, but the best that I can see from experience and other people that I've been in contact with that have this kind of direct experience way, way beyond anything that I'm aware of at this point. And I'm really unqualified. It's kind of a joke, but it's a sad joke, because you need somebody really, you know, clear to remind you that so are you, and to get back to it gradually, step by step, by doing your lessons that are given to you every second in the best way that you can, and having some respect and paying attention. And, you know, instead of that, we've got me sitting here, and I'm trying to learn as much as you guys are, and I've just been exposed to some things, and so it's my responsibility to share that in case there's anybody that might benefit. Not to convince anyone of anything. It has nothing to do with that. Even if you think something I bring up is completely crazy, great. You know, it will make you clearer on what you find out really is true for you. It doesn't have to have any relation to something that I think is right. You're the main character in this whole play. You have incredible brilliance, way beyond anything you imagine right now, other than some people that may be tuning in at the moment, but not on a physical level. So I'm just attempting to do my job, aware of practically endless things that, you know, are not qualified in me, but I have to do that anyway the best I can. So even if you leave me way behind and you get to where you are clear and I'm still on fractions, as they said in Adam's Family Values. I really like that line. That's great. And you're not limited by anything I say. This is just for you. This show is all about you. It has nothing to do with me or any of these other people. They're just to trigger a reminder in you of the awesome being that you are. Because this is something my personality really would like to see. And it's because not only are you the key player on the stage right now, and you always have been, but you're the hope for turning things around in the world so that other people who don't realize their potential yet don't have to go through the hell that the rulers are planning for them as part of their ritual of ending life here. Because simply put, that's exactly what's going on. And their Achilles heel, which at the very top level of control, they realize this, is you personally, who you are underneath, who you think you are. That's their weak spot. So it's just like in Star Wars. Sorry for all the movie stuff today. I hope you don't mind. In the first really great Star Wars movie that has so much symbolism in it, when this Death Star was being made, right, to blow up as much good in the galaxy as they could possibly blow up and enslave everybody, you know, much like what's happening now on a bigger scale. And all these people died trying to look for weak spots, and they finally found one. And it was this little tiny hole called a port. And if they could shoot some bombs in there, they could blow up the Death Star before it blew up the planets of all the, you know, good civilizations. And that was what the movie was about, in large part, the plot. And that's where you get to meet Yoda and Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke and Leia and all these people. So that's what you're in. You're in a movie just like that. The sound effects and the cinematics and the graphics and everything are way better than what George Lucas had at the time. They're so much better that you can't distinguish it from reality. Just open your eyes and check it out. It really looks real. And not only visual, this movie is auditory. You can smell it, you can taste it, and there are other senses if you open those up. So it's incredible. And you don't even remember being scouted, most likely, to become the main character, and here you are. So what are you going to do? It's not like some minor issue. It's a big deal. And the difference in playing your role the best you can, although you're going to do that no matter what, even if you play the role of an unconscious person who thinks all this stuff is stupid or doesn't care or whatever, it doesn't matter. That is the character to perfection. But you can choose to have that character evolve to somebody who's aware of what's going on multiple levels, and aware that this is a play, and aware that it matters what you do in the play, because the impressions of this play penetrate deeply into your consciousness from whatever you do, and the consciousness of everyone else, and for them it's the same. So this is why you don't need any nasty God to enforce punishment on you. You're going to take care of that yourself, as well as rewards and everything else, because your consciousness goes to a point at a deeper level that is aware of absolutely everything. And the only roadblock to experiencing that is that at a deep gut level, you don't believe that's possible. And so it isn't for your character for now. But as you choose to get more aware of those things, and you watch your own mind repeating all this programming, it's not the other people around you, it's your own mind. Forget about critiquing everybody, because that distracts you from where your work is. If you watch your mind telling you this memorized stuff all day and all night in your dreams and on all different levels, just keeping you completely aware of yourself, thinking that you are these identities and comparing yourself to other people and, you know, thinking about how they're blowing it or hero worshiping and thinking somebody's really great when you should be looking at yourself and finding the greatness that is hidden once you dump the ego junk and the personality stuff and all that. That's where the focus is useful. And you can start whenever you're ready, you know, but your mind is always going to give you excuses why this is not really a good time. You're getting ready to do such and such. Your schedule for today is already set. You know, but see, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Because the work we're talking about, which is paying attention so that you can start being aware, that's always going to be while you're doing something else. Even if you're sitting in meditation, yeah, you're sitting physically somewhere in meditation. That's a physical job. And while you're doing that, you're attempting to pay attention and let the constant harassment by your own mental programs go. And when you realize it's back and you slipped back into it, don't beat yourself up. Don't ever punish yourself for anything. This is a big fraud. Remember I said that justice is a low-level human concept. There's a lot of people who are going to be really upset at that because they say, no, God punishes everybody and God rewards everybody. And remember, we just had Dr. Warner on last week, right? Yeah, last Sunday, saying that Muhammad taught very clearly that the Muslims are all going to be tortured forever by God, who loves them so much, in hell if they do some terrible thing like try to convert to another religion or don't agree to help blow up a church if they are asked to do it for Allah or, you know, things like that are mortal sins. So it's God that's going to punish you. And, you know, a lot of Christians have the same idea that you're going to get sent to hell forever by this loving God if you make a mistake of the wrong kind. These are called mortal sins and other things like that. And it's not just these religions that we know, it's all kinds of belief systems and religions all over the world that think God is there watching over you like this big guy with a long beard and, you know, really nasty expression, all kinds of weapons like lightning bolts and worse in his arsenal. And he's either going to just completely love you because you do the right thing and send you to paradise or nirvana or heaven or wherever because you did all the right things and you said all the right things, or he's prepared to just tear you to shreds, not once, but indefinitely. And I'm telling you, there's something closer to you, not closer than God really, because it's the same thing, but a level of your own consciousness that a lot of people don't know about. And it watches everything you do. And it has a natural tendency to want to get back to reality and back to harmony. Even on a physical level in biology, you see a tendency back toward homeostasis, right? Remember that term, at least in high school or somewhere, where systems try to balance themselves and keep themselves in check from going too far outside the designated limits of normal range. Well, that's a reflection of something that happens similarly with consciousness. And there's a tendency in you to want to get back to your normal state, which is a really, there's nothing I can say about it that even comes close to describing it. But let me just say it's something really good. You might want to go back there as soon as you get a chance. And you don't have to leave the world. You do it. The trick is doing it while you're running around, you know, going to work or picking up the kids at school or watching a baseball game, or that's when you have to do it. Not just when you're praying, not just when you're meditating, but while you're living and breathing all the time. And you can't possibly do it by any kind of hard effort or stress. Forget it. You don't even have to waste your energy on that. It's not possible. Because there's this thing called action and reaction in the realm of physical duality within the hologram. And it makes sure, like Newton was getting a little bit of insight into, that every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So if you try and do the grapefruit diet for the rest of your life, you're probably going to end up eating only pizza or something like that. So that's what happens when you do things by force. When you find the place inside yourself that gets to relax and do things without stress, your abilities become unlimited. That's just waiting, you know, and you don't have to give up going to the baseball game or picking up the kids. You just get to a point finally when you say, I just really don't want to wait anymore. I want to see what this feels like. And that's a huge step. And to get there, you know, more directly, it's a good idea to watch your programming and start observing it. You know, a lot of meditation systems talk about watching your breath, because the idea is if you're busy watching your breath, it's going to calm you down. You're not going to be watching the ridiculous thought patterns that are racing around screaming in your mind, in most people. If you're watching your breath, it gets more relaxed right away. But you can also watch those thought patterns. And if they're happening, it's better to be aware of them. And because if you're aware of them, you don't have to latch on to them. You can just be aware of them. And talk to your mind, because your mind's listening to you. See, I had to be willing to say these things that sound completely crazy and not worry about what you think of me as a result. Because you can hear normal things almost anywhere you want to. So I have to say this stuff. Your mind listens to you. It's like a little kid that's out of control and is running the house because you're not giving it any guidance. And you're thinking, oh, that's just my mind. It has to do whatever it's going to do, and that's just unavoidable and normal. No, not really. That's what it's learned that you will let it do. And, you know, if you have a kid that's really badly behaved and you try to control that kid by severe force, you know what happens? It's not good. The kid is probably going to become a major criminal. But if you can get through to that kid that you're not the enemy, you're the friend, in fact, you love them, they're going to get interested gradually, because even bad kids that are acting bad, they're not really bad, but the ones that are acting bad, even major criminals, even your own chaotic mind, underneath, they're all after love. Even though they may program themselves that that's stupid, you can never get it, it's just an illusion that naive people think about, or you know, in the case of our rulers, that this is a sign of weakness and that that's how they can dominate you. Whatever they're thinking like that, underneath, they're all after love, because the only thing that's supporting any of them still existing is that love. And so, you know, language is really misleading and really limiting. And since we're using it, it's a good idea to be as conscious as we can. And there are different kinds of love, like we've talked about, and the romantic love can be fantastic and really great. But that's not the kind that we're talking about at the moment. Talking about an ability, one of your almost infinite number of forgotten abilities that you have. And it's to transmit something to any life form around you. And every spot in space is full of life. So it just depends on what target you choose. And you also have an ability to choose unlimited numbers of multiple targets with full awareness at once. You have abilities that are pretty amazing. So if you send out to somebody, or even a supposedly inanimate object, your car, your chair, your office, or an animal, or a plant, or a stone, that like light feeling. I don't know how to describe it. It's like what comes out of the sun and makes you feel really good when it hits your skin. But full of that desire for the being that you're sending it to feel incredibly good and happy and have everything that they want. Not destructive stuff, but, you know, things that maybe they've forgotten that they want that are going to make them happy. That's the kind of love I'm talking about. It's got a signature electronic frequency to it. And you're walking around as this unlimited generator, transmitter, that can give that to anybody. It's this, not fighting, that is our hidden strength. And at the top level of the power structure, they know all about it. They don't know how to, they do know what they would have to do to get it, and they're not willing to let go. It's like, you know, it reminds me of a parable that a lot of the Indian teachers talk about, where in order to catch monkeys, you can go out in certain jungles and you bring a little cage with you. It's not big enough for the monkey, but you can put a banana in it that's ripe and really smells good to them. And the bars are close together, just enough so that the monkey that you want to catch puts his hand through, grabs the banana, and cannot get it out again because now his hand's too big. Now that monkey, in that particular type of monkey, whatever it is in that jungle, gets so attached to the banana, they'd rather be caught and even killed. And probably a lot of these hunters just kill the monkeys and eat them. You know, as barbaric as that actually is, that's what they do. And that's what's happening to us, because we have these mental patterns going by, and some of them tell us how great we are, which is a total nonsense and big distraction on the personality level. And some of them tell us how terrible we are, which is an equally false trap. And those are the banana. Or thinking of how bad somebody else is, or thinking about how great somebody else is, or endlessly analyzing some situation to the point where you can't detach from it. Those are the banana, and we're the monkey. And all that, you laugh at the monkey and say, oh, what a stupid monkey, you know. All he has to do is let go of the banana, and he can run away. He's much faster than the hunter. Yeah, but how come we're not letting go of the banana then, if it's that easy? So we punish ourselves and we reward ourselves according to our programming. And they're both fake. So if you drop those, then what's on a finer level behind them starts to become visible or perceivable. And then eventually, you know, if we do drop those preconceptions, we can't tell any difference between who we must be and what we're perceiving, because the lines of separation go away, which is important, because separation is one of the biggest causes of suffering on the physical plane. You know, everybody's lost somebody that they care about, and it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good not to be able to get closer to somebody that you really love, and you have all these barriers in between. And even when you're, you know, living with them, sometimes you can't grasp it, but you can just feel that on a subconscious level there's things that are keeping you apart. And the reality is those are all projections, and it's being projected as part of the hologram on multi dimensions from inside of us. So if we get into that, that's the port on the Death Star that we can explode. Once we do that, and everybody's got exactly what they need to do it, then the really nasty controllers, even they will remember, and this whole game will be over. So it sounds like nothing. It's actually not nothing. It's kind of a big deal. You have immediate access right now. But generally, getting to it is a multi-stage process that can take a very long period of time. But each step that you get to that gets you closer to being free of the programming and knowing yourself so that you're capable of knowing where you came from and what you came from, because you're finding out who you are, every step toward that is like some kind of tremendous reward in itself that just stays, and it gets better and better. So that's what I personally would like to see happen, you know, with enough of us doing that. And it doesn't take huge numbers because there's so much power. I'd like to see enough of us be able to do that so that the rest of this ritual that we're here as the sacrifice for gets canceled. Hope that makes sense to all of you. I want to see this ritual canceled soon. As soon as possible, because each step is very uncomfortable and the power structure is accelerating the movements toward the finish of the ritual. Because at the top, they're worried that we might wake up. And waking up does not mean saying, oh, wow, I know there's chemtrails. It's important to know that because there are things we might be able to do to stop them, but that's not waking up. That's a very minor awareness of a political reality. And I'm talking about something different, because when you wake up to the something different and then you want to stop the chemtrails, your actions start having power that there's no way they can even begin to have when you're on the level of fighting violence, confrontation, you know, adversarial stuff, hating the people who are flying the chemtrail planes. You might have to physically fight if things get too bad, you know, or if you get, you or your family or your kids or your friends get threatened and you've got the means in your hands to defend them, you may have to do it. You may have to defensively use any kind of measures that are needed at the time, but that's not the answer internally. That's not the way to end the ritual. And I personally would like to see us end the ritual. So, you know, we've got a little bit more time. I know Dee's holding on the line in California. So let's see what she has in mind. And we've still got a few minutes left. Good morning, Dee. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. Glad to hear you. I like what you were saying today. I just have a couple questions about something. Said, you were talking at the beginning about how the past can change, and I was wondering if you could clarify on what you mean as far as that. Could it be the programming or the consequences or the feelings of the past, or what? How exactly could the past change?
Well, it's going to sound really weird, I have to warn you, but you know, you probably already know that about me by this point. So, the way that I mean that, and I can't prove it to you yet, but I've seen enough, I'm pretty certain that it's absolutely true. And what it means is that, even if you hear me say this, realizing that it might actually be true is a lot different thing. And when I talk about the outside physical appearing reality being part of a projected hologram, I literally mean that. And so the hologram includes all time frames. So in our memory is part of that hologram as what we call the past. And there's a way that people have talked about that you can get into a point inside yourself that you can literally change your past so that it will never have happened that way. It's not just the consequences, the past itself. And this is definitely enough to make everybody, the remaining people who are wondering, think that I'm completely crazy. but I have to tell you about it anyway. I don't think you're going to hear about it on mainstream television or even other television or anywhere. Because when you see that the entire hologram is projected, your memory of the past is part of it. And that can actually go back and change what it was then. And the reason is because the future and the past and the present are all contained right now. So any part of them can change. And it's probably not explained very well, but that's what I mean.
Well, it has to do with other people too, not just me. So how does that...
Yeah, this is the hard part of that, you know, paradox that I was trying to describe before. And really describing paradoxes in regular English language is probably not possible without a lot of poetic license or something. But all of us are interconnected in a way that is intricate beyond our imagination. So if you do that, then the people that are connected to your life experience will have their experience change as well, and it will be coming from them, because it's not going to happen unless the related people are in a state where that can all happen together. And if you get one person can change things that don't change things too radically for other people, but if you're going to start changing things for a larger scale where it really makes serious differences in a lot of other people's lives, then it has to be done in concert with several people, three or more, doing it at the same time with the same awareness. And according to the best sources that I've found, three or more can change it on a global scale. And nobody will even know outside of those three that it's ever been any different, because it's changed for them. And to do this change, if you ever get, well, when you get to that point of having that ability, you have to have permission from a higher level of the self, of everybody who is connected, which can come through permission from the being that is called Mother Earth, the same one that the UN is trying to use as a scam to enslave everybody now, is actually a real being who's in touch with every single life form on her. And if you get her permission for larger scale changes, then it's something that can go ahead. This is on a whole different level of everything than normal conversation. So I'm probably massacring it by what I'm saying.
No.
I'm trying.
I'm trying to understand that. And, well, memory is past. I mean, I like to think of, in my own experience, I'm thinking of the past as being my memory of it. But I can change my memory of it by, like, I've noticed that my mind will sometimes dwell, like on an ex relationship, dwell on maybe what was the most negative about it, and then on a different relationship, maybe dwell on what was the most positive about it, which gives it a slant. So
yeah, I'm talking about a different kind of memory. There's a level of memory that's not really conscious in most people most of the time, that is like reliving accurately in crystal clarity, exactly the same as when you were living it. It's what some people talk about, going back and reliving part of their life when they're about to die. It's clear. And that memory is connected to the real experience that you had when you lived it, not what your mind is filtering it now, you know, through some kind of lens of the intermediate experience. It's what it really was at that time for you. And that at its root origin in the past can be changed. That's what I'm talking about. And when you change that, what really happened, and now it's different, then your memory of it's not the same.
Is that because the link between what I'm doing with my programming now is going to revert and take along with it what caused the programming in the first place?
It's coming from the experience that you had originally. And then that is being combined with the, you know, programs that you've run since that time. But the original experience is what you lived through. So if that gets changed, which is what I'm talking about, everything else following gets changed as well.
And it doesn't matter what point in time you're referring to?
No, because they're all contained now.
Okay. Well, it'll take me a while.
Yeah, it doesn't have to make sense at the moment. But all of it starts to make more sense by just following the lesson that you're being handed in the immediate present. And wanting to pay more attention to that and less to all the distracting, constant mind programs that are going on, and just getting clearer and seeing what's being given to you now. And it turns out that whatever is happening this second is exactly tailored to some great thing that you could understand and learn. It's, you're not missing like the best lesson that you could get. You're in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just keep doing that, everything else, understanding impossible things and all that, automatically evolves.
Okay. My other question had to do with what you were talking about, intent versus actions. Like when I was looking into some kind of psychologies, I was learning that there's a benefit from separating a person from their actions, because it's not the person that's a bad person, but it might be their actions that's an inappropriate action. I mean, I can apply that to my own thinking also. But you were talking about intent. What is the difference between the intent and the action in the hologram?
Intent precedes action.
Okay, so it just...
So intent always produces a result.
Okay, so intent will produce an action, period.
Well, sorry, I didn't hear that clearly.
Intent will produce an action?
Intent will produce a result.
Okay.
Okay. You can have an intent while you're sitting motionless, and you're not going to maybe physically act. But wherever your intent is going, it's affecting the people and the energies and the things that it is going to. So this is the basis of what people, some very confused and malevolent people, turned into things like voodoo. Because if you intend that somebody has an accident, this doesn't work for most people because they're not focused enough. But if you're really focused, you can hurt people. That's what curses are. And the reason that that's really a stupid thing to do is because there's no one disconnected from you. So if you hurt someone, it doesn't matter why, it hurts you. So nobody intelligent would do curses on anybody. But, you know, there are people learning about that. So that's a result that your intent for that person to be hurt produces. On the other side of that, you've heard about praying for people. And what that means really is not reciting some memorized thing. If you have an intent that someone else gets something good, right when you have that, depending on how focused it is, that affects that person, and they don't ever have to know. Some intents produce actions, like when you intend to reach and pick up your pen. You had the intent to pick up the pen, it made your arm move, and you picked up the pen, and there were, you know, a million different little biological things that had to happen for that. But you can have an intent without a physical action, and it still has a result, like when you're wishing good things for people.
Okay.
So as soon as you realize that you're connected to everybody, you just go way out of your way to wish good for everybody you can, and you're busy with it all the time. You don't stop. It's like if you found out this would put money in your bank account and you want money, you would just do this constantly. And this is, you know, even stronger than a regular bank account, because it leads to things that could even give you a bank account, but it's way more than that. So even if you were in a dire self-defense situation or defending children or whatever, or other people with firearms, and you're defensively having to kill people, and you understand this principle, you will never hate them, because that's a curse. And if you hate somebody, even if you're having to defend your life by killing them, you don't hate them. You just defend yourself.
So you are separating the action from the being in that sense.
Yeah, I'm saying no matter what your action has to be, which is a matter of what has to be done in the physical world, or what is most constructive in the physical world, because you do have options usually. The intent has to be an independent, like, track, you know, like how they record different tracks of music. It's got to be an independent track playing the song that you want, no matter what you're having to do on the physical level. And when you notice that you're playing the wrong track, you go back to it and put the right one on again. You don't get into this self-punishment thing. It's all a waste of time.
That reminds me, I used to do the Gollum thing a lot. Like, I would be talking back and forth to myself constantly. And I think that's probably a good thing, because it would bring it to awareness of what's really going on.
Yeah, sure. Just being clear.
Yeah, but then I noticed, like, the negative part would get the better of the conversation in the past. And now that I've been practicing my homework, my Schmeagol's been coming out on top, which is great.
Yeah. Well, Smeagol will like that too, because he never really wanted to be Gollum.
Right. Well, life is but a dream. So on this holographic dance of connections, do you think that it's, if you build it, they will come, like what they said in the Field of Dreams movie? Like, in other words, if I have intent as a scaffolding that something, and it's a good intent, that something good will come attach itself to it?
Yeah, it will. The balance changes, you know, because the automatic programming has been negative. And so that's still, you're still getting the results from that, which gradually fade out. And they fade out faster if the new, better dreams are clear and more constant.
Okay, so it's like a teeter-totter, and so it can stay more on the
or balanced. Right, and it's really your best defense against so-called, you know, unforeseen accidents or bad events in your life. Doesn't mean you can eliminate them all, because it depends what you've set in motion before. But you can eliminate more and more of them and replace them with good things. And as soon as you really grasp that, you just want to do it constantly.
Yeah, I've been noticing that. It's pretty cool. So I like it.
It's fun.
I think it's changing my physicalness too. I mean, I think my immune system's appreciating it.
It does, because being happy has a better biological chemical reaction in your body than being upset.
Okay. So on this dream life or life dream hologram, it's actually physical reality besides being just a holographic dream. It's both at once.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you feel?
Yeah, well, there is what we call physical as part of the hologram. There's nothing solid about it, really.
Okay.
Sorry. I mean, it seems that way, but it's not.
So that's why you can jump around in the time frame? frame of it all, because it's not a hard physical, it's a soft physical. Is that kind of what you mean?
Well, no, it's going to feel hard. I mean, your hand doesn't move through walls in normal consciousness. But there's a difference between understanding that it might be a hologram and experiencing it that way. Once it gets to a certain depth of real experience, then all the physical laws change.
Well, can you expand on that a little bit? Because you kind of lost me there.
Yeah, there's in the beginning, it's a nice idea because it might give you new abilities. But when you keep doing, you know, these practices, like getting your transmissions so that they're sending wonderful things to everybody, and you just try to think of better and better things to send out, the reactions on you are going to start clearing out the fog. And instead of just understanding better, you're going to start experiencing, which is a whole different thing.
Okay.
You know, you can understand what the color blue is in wavelengths and physics terms and stuff like that. But when you see something blue, it's not the same thing.
So actually seeing it is actually dancing with it or partaking in it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not something you can force to happen. It's going to happen by itself if you do what's needed to get the blocks out of the way. We don't have to construct any of this stuff. It's already there.
Okay, but the scaffolding maybe we could construct.
Yeah, it turns out to be the easiest thing that you could ever imagine. But changing the focus is required, you know, to let it start happening.
Oh, that's the key to getting it going, is changing the focus.
Yeah.
Like my goal.
It's not a strain stress type effort.
Okay.
But it is conscious decision.
Well, I know, because when a thought comes into my mind that's self-condemning, I do that little conversation thing, and then the part that comes out on top is going, no, that's wrong. That's not it.
Exactly. No. Yeah. Yeah. So you're more interested in direct perception than in all the stuff that the mind is busy with.
Well, I'm getting there. It's been a gradual thing.
It's going to come up automatically because it's who you are. All this other stuff's not permanent, not real.
I feel like I'm more on top of it than underneath it, for sure.
It's like a really great voice teacher from the old time in Italy, several hundred years ago, opera masters, they weren't teaching how to hold your mouth or how to make a certain sound by having a certain posture or focus on your diaphragm pushing a certain way. They were saying, if you just do this exercise, all of your singing abilities are just going to gradually show up. And it's just like that. So
okay.
if you send, you know, your project can be sending more and more wonderful things to everybody and not telling them about it, just doing it. And then keep working on that. That's like the exercise of singing scales.
Oh, and that's how you mean you can change the path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever time needs to change is going to change. But you have to get there.
I had maybe a conversation that I had with one of my daughters or something come to mind, and I immediately recognized what I said wrong. And then, in my mind, I can change my response.
Don't try to change what happened right now, because you're not there yet. But instead, know that maybe that had a bad response and start sending out a different intent and a different conversation to your daughter silently. And
yeah.
make sure that the new feeling is with it. And keep doing that and see what happens.
Okay.
And even if you're in an argument, don't let your feelings fall into that argument.
Do you think
keep doing this?
The feelings are really important. important. They like are the scaffolding.
The emotion is what puts the power behind these things. The thoughts without the emotion don't have any power.
Oh, that's the gasoline to get it going.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah, so just watch. That's a good reason to watch your emotional state and be conscious of it. So, listen, we have. I'm almost having to go, and I want to
give
John a minute. So, but
work
with that, and we should have more normal time next weekend, and tomorrow night.
I hope that. You answered them perfectly. So, thank you so much.
All right, all right. Have fun playing with it, and we'll talk to you next time.
All righty.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. See ya. How are you doing, John?
Good morning. How are you, Richard?
I'm doing fine. What's going on?
I know you've got to not much. I know you've got to go on a pinch. I just want to say you and Doug have been doing a fantastic job. I've been listening to the past shows, and you've got especially your conversations with Dee are really great and basically always.
Yeah, I feel like Dee should get credit for a big part of this show because all I have to do is just respond to some things.
But you respond fantastically. I think her questions basically allow you to share or basically just expand on the concepts in ways that basically make it very clear or clearer as you go on. So doing a great job with that. And I know you're
going to have a pinch. It's nice to hear that because I'm fully aware of how completely insane most of this will sound to the general public. But I pretty much let go of the idea that very many people will, relate to this show, but I think it doesn't matter, like the few that do, I think it's for them.
No, I don't think it sounds, it sounds perfectly rational and clear. I think you've gotten better with each show, every time you're presenting it and you're answering questions that Dee and myself and other people call in with, I think you're developing a better ability to explain these things to the layperson, I guess, is the best way to say it. No, so you're really improving, and so now with each passing show, it doesn't sound. It sounds less and less woo woo, and more like, oh, of course.
Good. I'm really happy to hear that. I hope that continues because it's a really it's an interesting exercise for me because it's like you have to make this painting with all, and you don't have any of the right colors, which are words, and so you kind of got to use the words you have, and then hope that some kind of feeling is going to be underneath those that will convey what you want to say.
Especially, thank Dee for her calls because every time you have conversations with her, it really do help to, again, paint the clearer picture. I mean, it gets clearer and clearer with each time that you go back and forth on a certain subject or a certain point. It gets clear, and I'm really, really getting excited because just as with each passing show, it just gets easier for the concepts to sink in. So now it sounds less woo-woo and more and more of what people can really digest and take in as you share this information.
Good. I'm really glad to hear that. So what were you thinking? We've got a couple more minutes if you wanted to talk about anything in particular.
Yeah, I wanted to expand on the concept of a curse because I believe that those exist and that the energy exists. And so I was wondering, what can somebody experiencing a curse or a evil eye or just a particular form of envy when that energy happens upon a person? What can they do to clear that? I mean, like say you're the object of envy or a curse. How do you remove that?
Well, the best thing that I've found, and I'm sure there's other ways, but rather than any kind of ritualistic thing, the best thing that I've found is if you are transmitting like we've been talking about today, and if you become aware that there's some negative source coming to you, you pick them as a target for your positive transmitting, and it really messes up the negative energy so that it's not very effective.
Okay.
I've actually found that to work quite well. And it's kind of like, not exactly, but a martial art like Aikido, where this guy is charging in, and you're going to grab your neck or grab your body or something. And you, instead of resisting, you completely harmonize with it to the point where you roll and the attacker goes flying off in the other direction with no effort on your part at all. So what attacks and curses really need to be most effective is they need to lock on to some kind of a complementary energy in you. And if you don't have anything that you're wishing harm to anyone else, it's very difficult to put a very good curse on you because you're just not a good subject.
Mm. So it always goes back to basically self-work. Like we, you know, like you discuss with every week, it's always like, here's the homework. It's always the self-work, ultimately.
The point of ultimate power is all internal.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a gym to work out, you know, it seems like it's whoever can push the most weight. But almost all of that gym exercise is mental. And see who has the most focus and really can get their attention into the muscle to make it work better. And that's what makes it develop when you're working out. So in this case, if you get in tune with yourself that has love for everybody and drop the justice thing completely, get away from that because that weakens you and it opens you up to attack like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This approach is so much stronger than justice. There's just no comparison. It's like this brilliant field of light around you that eventually when it gets constant enough, negative things just don't penetrate it.
Mm-hmm.
Even accidents tend to not happen. It's really kind of exciting. You know, once you grasp the idea that it could even be true, and then you start working with it, it just gets more amazing as it goes along. And you don't appear to be doing, anything. Where your real power is not in what you're doing physically.
Right. So it's more about sharing a love for basically your fellow man and for other people and dropping that concept of that they're right or wrong, they're doing requires, you know, punishment or requires correction or any of that.
Yeah, because that puts you down in the level of judge, and judges get assassinated all the time.
Right.
You know, so on an energy level, there's subtle differences of understanding here. You don't make believe that you love people that you don't love. That's just dishonest and it's not true and it doesn't help you. Mm-hmm. What you do is you do the kind of love that's active, like a verb, not a noun. You're sending blessings because you have that power to people totally irrespective of anything they deserve. The deserving thing is part of the judgment paradigm. So forget about deserving. And the only way you can honestly do that with respect to other people is if you actually do it with yourself. And that's the hardest for most of us, that we can, you know, supposedly forgive other people, but not ourselves. And we keep carrying around guilt. Guilt doesn't reform you or make you a good person ever. And it never overcomes a mistake you made. And I'm talking as somebody who's made probably as many or more stupid mistakes in my life and really hurtful to other people than anybody I know of. But what I found out from persistently trying the self-punishment thing for years and years and years is that not only does it not help you and it doesn't redeem you and it doesn't reform you, doesn't make you a good person. If anything, it makes you worse. So if you want this ability to do this and make this field around yourself that is impenetrable by curses, one of the things that is required in your homework is to go and scan inside yourself, find out what you're criticizing yourself for and what you're condemning yourself for, and actually completely letting it go and leaving that whole level of judgment. Because if you're judging yourself, you have to judge everybody else. And if you want to send love, you know, wishing for good energy for other people, you're going to have to do that to yourself as a prerequisite.
So this would include then people who, you know, you eat healthy, you're eating raw, you're basically, you know, taking good care of your body, but they always, not always, but then those people that have that healthy lifestyle but still manifest a physical condition or
yeah, they can have a total, they can have a totally poisoned physical bloodstream, even if they only eat, you know, once a month or something, by the toxic thoughts that they're carrying around.
Right.
And they're always judging people and thinking how great they are because they only eat once a month and everybody else is down in the mud eating every day or whatever it is they're thinking, you know. It's that kind of judgmental thought that instantaneously can poison your bloodstream, even no matter what kind of diet you're on.
Right.
And there is a point, consciousness is so powerful that there is a point. You could not only be eating garbage, but battery acid, and you could detoxify it with consciousness alone, but do not try that at home because you have to be, you have to be at a really, really different place to do anything like that. So for most of us regular people, it matters what we physically eat, but it's not enough to be moving towards a healthier diet. You've got to work. You've got to become conscious of your emotions and your thoughts and redirect them, not like it's like a child that you're taking care of. You cannot take a bad child and just force it to be good. It's not going to work. It'll become a master criminal, which your mind will do. So you have to do it by understanding, dropping all criticism of yourself and just redirect it out of knowing the incredible beauty that's under that that you want to bring out. And the more you do that, you then get this ability to have a stronger field around you because you'll start sending that honest, total non-judgment love to other people, right? And if you get to where you're sending that out to them all the time, you can't be touched other than by your own permission.
So it's like you've been discussing with these different people, you know, regarding the different religions. And then also just, of course, the educational system. It's just, then it's a lot of unloading. I mean, a lot of the things that children, when they're born, they're before school and before church.
Yeah, it's not their fault. They spiritually signed up for the program of learning to deal with lifelong programming. And in some cases, it's the programming of killing. And the lesson ultimately is, number one, maybe you were critical of everybody else for doing that last time. So this time it's you. I mean, you don't know what's behind it. And
Right. Nobody
really is good to judge because that is you in another form. So the love that you're sending out is to give them the boost to come out of it and to remember who they are. But with no expectation, you're just giving it to give it. What they do with it is not yours.
Right. Wow. I mean, that's it. Again, you've done a really great job in these past couple, I mean, hearing it again now helps, but these past couple shows, these past couple Saturdays, it's getting clearer that how to do it. I mean, basically, you just say,
yeah.
Love everybody.
And it's understanding that word love, you know, it's not fooling yourself that you think somebody's great when they're terrible. It has nothing to do with that.
Right.
So anyway, we're about out of time, so I got to go.
Okay.
But work on it this week and let us know what happens.
I will. Thanks, Doug, and thanks, Richard Basic, for all the great work you do, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for helping me with the show. I'll see you next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, thank you for putting up with the shortened show and with all the unusual ideas this time. I really appreciate all of you very much. I'm actually working with you constantly all the time because I'm doing the same stuff that we're talking about, and you've everything that comes to you every minute of the week and the time in between, it's tailored perfectly for you, sent to you by a deeper level of your own awareness. So appreciate it, say thank you, and then do the lesson, and we'll see you next time.